This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get rewards points delivered too. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
A very good evening to you. It is Sunday night, so that can only mean one thing. It is extra time, the final word on the weekend's action. And there's so much to get stuck into tonight. It did finish, of course, Wolverhampton Wanderers 1, West Ham United 2, but that's not the whole story at all. No wonder I've got the old VAR error apology repeat t-shirt on tonight. And I'll tell you what, we've got so many people wanting to come on the show to talk tonight that we're going to have to split the show into two halves. We've got so many people that want to come on to have their say. But we have got a great show. I promise you this is going to be such a fantastic show. And I hope that you're all going to join in the chat as well. I have got joining us tonight, really, really pleased and proud to have him coming on. We have Sky legend, Johnny Phillips. How are you doing, mate?
I'm well, Dave. How are you? That's a very kind introduction.
Well, mate, you've been on the show a few times. We've done some in-person podcasts as well. And, you know, it's great that you can come on tonight to talk about the game. And you were actually working yesterday, wasn't you, for Sky down at Molineux? And I believe you interviewed Gary straight after the match.
Yeah, Sky were the host broadcasters for the game. It was live around the world. So I was there just to do the pre-match and the post-match interviews. So I spoke with David Moyes and James Ward-Prowse from West Ham, and then Max Kilman and Gary O'Neill from Wolves after the match.
Fantastic. And I mean, we're going to get stuck into the game. We've got loads more fans that are going to come on. They'll probably want to ask you a few questions. But the mood after the game, Molineux was quite hostile at the end with the officials walking off. There was a lot of anger. There was people around me literally spitting blood because of what happened. Obviously, you interviewed Gary O'Neill. I mean, he was talking about it being a scandalous decision. I think he was asked to leave the referee's room as well, wasn't he? As well, because
I'm not sure. He said he went into the referee. I think they have to wait for a certain amount of time before they're allowed in to see the referee.
I think it may be 30 minutes.
So he waited that amount of time, and then he went in to see the referee. And then after he went in with the ref, he came over to us. By a matter of seconds, he avoided the fine. There's a fine if the managers don't come out after a certain amount of time to do the broadcast interview. And he was just inside that that time scale. So he went to the ref first, then he came to us. And he said that, you know, he wasn't in the right frame of mind. I think it words to that effect, that he wasn't in the right frame of mind to get a full explanation from the referee. And there was a lot of anger in the tunnel afterwards. They can be fraught places at the best of times when it comes to a losing team. But certainly this added an extra layer of sort of tension and testosterone in the tunnel afterwards. And, you know, quite a few of the players felt aggrieved. Max Kilman in his interview, I always find him, I don't know if bland, I don't mean this harshly, but he's quite a bland interview in that he's not a colourful character with a mic underneath his nose. But on this occasion, it was pretty much the liveliest I've seen him in a post-match interview. He was really, really aggrieved and was really, really forthright about it. And obviously, I think most people would have seen the Gary O'Neill interview by now. He didn't hold back at all.
No, and I think that, Johnny, is a build-up of frustration. I mean, when Wolves have had some really bad VAR decisions, we've not had any for a little while, but Gary also made sort of... I think he made reference to the fact that David Moyes and even Fabianski didn't even think it should have been disallowed as well, from what I've kind of read. Is that right, or was it just...
Yeah, no, he said it was a scandalous decision, and he said that Moyes and Fabianski agreed with him. We'll have to take his word for that. They didn't say it was scandalous Moyes didn't describe it as a scandalous decision. I think he had some sympathy. I think from memory, he did have some sympathy with Gary O'Neill when he was speaking in his post-match interview about the decision. I know he showed, I think David Moyes deserves a bit of credit. He showed a bit of restraint in terms of helping the Wolves coaching staff not get themselves in too much trouble on the touchline. And then I think he pointed out to Gary O'Neill, there was a couple of players surrounding the ref at full time that needed to be pulled away. So I think Moyes was very helpful to the Wolves bench. You know, it was a really, really tough one to take for Gary O'Neill. And he was just in no mood to be diplomatic about the situation in his interview, was he?
Well, absolutely not. There's a question here that I just want to put on. There's loads of people that are commenting in the chat. We've already got well over 250 people watching live, and there'll be loads more watch it back. It'll be on the podcast as well. I mean, I don't know whether you do or not, or whether you got chance to speak to the referee, but Adrian Richards said, did you get to interview, or even if you didn't get to interview, did you get to sort of have a few words with the ref?
No, they shut their doors pretty quickly and didn't emerge. You can, you know, informally, there are opportunities to chat with referees sort of off the record, and they have chat. There are, you know, opportunities to speak with them. I don't think it was the right time. They were under a lot of pressure yesterday. It was quite a hostile moment. I don't think that would have been the time to approach them. Maybe in a week or two down the line, if I bump into one of them again, I could have a chat with them. They're always keen to explain their decisions, and they're always keen for openness and integrity and honesty as they see it. So I think probably later down the line, if I do bump into any of them, I might have a chance to just chat about it when the dust has settled. Because I think it's still quite raw, Dave. I think, you know, it's just over 24 hours since it's happened. And I think emotions are probably still running quite high from a Wolves perspective anyway.
Well, definitely quite high. You know, I think, you know, as Wolves fans, we've had a lot that's happened this year in terms of VAR, some really bad ones. But like the keeper, I mean, someone pointed out on Twitter or X, the pop star formerly known as Twitter, about Antonio backing into Saar for their goal off the corner, and he was in an offside position as well. I know it went straight in, and like obviously Kilman headed it in, but like no keeper was going to save that header, and I was really surprised because normally when you it's an offside decision, it's black and white, isn't it? You don't see the referee going to the monitor, and the referee, and when it comes up on the screen as you're in, obviously if you're watching it live on television, you might get more of an idea. But in the stadium, all you get is a screenshot. You don't actually see the moving part. You just see the screenshot that it's taken, but you don't see where the ball goes, how far away it's from the keeper. You know,
it's interesting you mentioned that thing about Antonio. I was chatting with one of the West Ham coaching staff who I know before the match, and we were just talking set pieces and corners in general, and how they've become impossible situations for coaches and managers to prepare for because so much is going on, and they're not entirely sure how much is being monitored, what's being let go, what isn't let go. And because there's a lot going on, and we saw it with a Norwich goal against Leicester in the Championship last week, we saw it City's goal against Liverpool. There's tactical blocking going on, and the managers all managers, as far as I'm aware, and coaching teams are preparing their teams, A, to guard against that, but also B, to do it as well. I think it's quite it's common practice now to look for ways of blocking. And it's just they say there's a lot of confusion within the game about what gets let through and what doesn't get let through. I mean, that's a different issue to this one. And in terms of the offside, it was a strange one, because clearly, if you look at the image, you know, the freeze, then our players in the line of sight as Fabianski, that's undeniable. So, you know, are we talking letter of the law? But then clearly, in terms of the spirit of the law and what happens, he has no bearing on the goal. You know, Fabianski was never getting there. The line of trajectory between Kilman's header and the ball was not on the same line as the Wolves player who was in the offside position. So it's a funny one, because it was called subjective offside. I think that it's the laws of the game that the issue here, as much as anything else. I think once the referee has been sent over to the monitor,
very rarely do they stick with the decision. But to be honest, I think if he had done and he'd come back and gone, do you know what? And I've watched it. And like all of us have got like, well, the keeper's never going to get that anyway.
No.
You'd sort of like put a lot of faith in, more faith. Oh, well, they are using common sense. And I think sometimes it's like common sense. And from a Wolves fan's point of view, it's almost like they're looking to find a reason to deny us the points.
I'd say that's nonsense.
There is a feeling out there. They're looking to try and find a reason.
Yeah, I mean, conspiracy theories are rife in football and they don't help anyone. I'd say there's probably subconscious bias to big names in the game. I think that probably does exist. Familiarity with big names, say for a team that gets promoted and people don't know the players and don't know the names and there isn't a relationship. I'd say there may be subconscious bias. There's no conspiracy going on. They are trying to do... It's funny, I chatted to a referee who's just recently retired, actually, and he said he laughs when he gets accused of bias, because he says it's hard enough to do this job and try and get the decisions right as it is without, in the back of your mind, trying to think, oh, I'll help this team out or I'll help that team out. He said he just laughs at that concept. He says it's so hard just to concentrate what I've got to do. I haven't got time to think about what colour, what team is in what colour and all the rest of it. So, yeah, I'd knock the conspiracy stuff on the head. But I do think the problem with this incident may have been the law and not the ref, because, you know, he's clearly in his line of sight and he's clearly in an offside position. But then he's also very clearly has no bearing on the incident. You know, the header's going in, the header's in the back of the net before the keeper can move. So
yeah, before he even blinks.
Yeah, you know, and the keeper can see the ball and he can see the line with the ball's going in, you know, but there is a player stood in his way. So it's from the referee's perspective, does he go to the monitor, disallow it and then risk getting in trouble for not applying the laws?
He shouldn't be feeling like that though, should he? He's reffing the game ultimately, and they've sent him because they aren't making that VAR of obviously saying, well, we think this, but we want you to have a look at it. That's spot on.
Yeah, you're spot on there, Dave.
Ref the game and
once it's been decided that it's subjective and it's his opinion, then in a way, there's not really much need for him to change his mind from his initial decision. You know, he had a perfectly good view of the corner. He doesn't really need to do anything. You're right there, you know. And that's the problem that VAR brings. It brings this extra layer of admin, for want of a better word, that the refs have to get by. And if there are controversial decisions being made on the pitch, then there are going to be controversial decisions made with VAR. So it's just leading to more and more controversial decisions. It's, you know, and ultimately it's the fans in the stadium who are suffering most of all, because as you say, they're not seeing everything. They're not hearing the discussions and that spontaneity and joy of celebrating.
How do you feel about, like, obviously we talked about this in a previous podcast where you weren't particularly in favour of Mike and not the refs, that they've been doing a trial where you can hear the VAR thing but not the ref talking the other way. How are you feeling on that now? Because as fans in the stadium, it's so frustrating at times that you're just looking around what's going on. If you're watching it on television, it's almost a better experience for the fans watching it on TV because you've got the replays running. And in the stadium, you just get a still image and you're like, what's gone on there?
Yeah, it's so frustrating, and it's something that surely in stadium for the fans that are really the lifeblood of the game, you know, the fans that go home and away, the fans that season ticket holders, and then you're stood in a stadium wondering, and you set with every Wolves fan in there is celebrating a great goal. For about 30 seconds, we're all going ballistic. You're probably like going under the thing, like, come on, like this as well, you know, politely, because I know you're doing a job, but you're a Wolves fan, so you'll probably go, yes. And then, like, after about 20, 30 seconds, all of a sudden you see VAR come up on the screen, and then there's this collective, sigh. Then you're like, offside. And we're all like, how can he be offside off a corner? And then... obviously, you get a still screen and then the goal's disallowed. And, of course, that then causes all of the anger at the end of the game. And then, obviously, it's been talked about, you know, on Final Score, on Talk Sport, on Five Live, on Match of the Day. There's column inches being written about it. You know, then they refer, you know, they're talking about all the incidents that have happened to Wolves this year. And today, of course, we've heard from the chairman, Jeff Shee, as well. He's actually... put out a statement about it too. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what purpose that serves other than just to support the players and manager, really. It's a public show of support for his manager. After a couple of results that haven't gone Wolves' way, and after, you know, the manager said a few things as well in the past week. So it's nice to see that that show of support. I don't think it's anything other than that. I don't think it's going to lead to anything. I don't think it's going to lead to law changes imminently. It's been another tough break for Wolves in the season, as you pointed out. He's shown his support for the managing players there.
Fantastic. Now, Johnny, we also want to talk about an event. You put the first one on last year over at the Grand, which was incredibly popular. Over at the Grand Theatre, we've also got celebrating 50 years, I believe, 1974, the Wembley Wonders. And we have got loads of fans that want to come on and ask a few questions in a second. We've got the Wembley Wonders here's at the Grand Theatre that you're going. Do you want to just talk us through this and the thinking behind it? Because you did one last year, which was very, very popular. And... you've got a lot of the 1974 winning squad that are going to be there on the night, and you're doing the interviews again.
Yeah, it should be good fun, this one. We've got so it's 50 years since that 74 League Cup final. I think I it was before my time, but I think for those old enough who remember it, it goes down as one of the great days because it was again a great, great City side with people like Dennis Law, Rodney Marsh, Summer B and Bell. You know, he's an amazing Man City side, almost as good as the one now. And Wolves went out there and having been in a quite a few semi-finals, been in a European final a couple of years earlier, finally got the win that great Wolves team deserved. So we've got pretty much all the surviving members of the squad, apart from Alan Sunderland, who lives out in Malta. But we've got all the surviving members of the squad. We've got some fans at the time involved as well. We've got some loads of footage that the players have dug out for us that we're going to be screening on the night as well.
Is that like a little behind-the-scenes stuff and things like that?
Yeah, we've got some nice behind-the-scenes stuff. So there'll be loads of little video clips. And it's just a celebration of that event. But quite importantly as well, we are supporting the Wolves Foundation with this because they do a lot of work in the area of dementia support and combating loneliness. They have Molyneux Memories, which they host with some of the ex-players down at the ground, which in aid of dementia and Alzheimer's, where people can come together and talk about matches that they remember when they were younger and help trigger those memories. And also, you know, combating loneliness. A lot of people get together and it's their chance to meet and chat. So the Wolves Foundation have backed this night and we're raising funds via ticket sales and other initiatives on the night for the foundation. So it should be really, really good night. And it's Tuesday, the 14th of May. There are quite a lot of it sold already, but it's a big theatre. So I think there's still there's still a fair few tickets left as well, so it should be brilliant.
Well, absolutely. And the if you listen to us on back on podcast, it is grandtheatre.co.uk/watch-on/Wolves-Wembley-Wonders. I've put it up on the screen there for you. Johnny, I've also put it in the description below the video. So anyone that wants to get tickets, it's going to be an absolute celebration of Wolves winning a trophy. We got to the, obviously, the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. We don't want to go over that one again, but like, we don't win that many trophies. It's 50 years since that fantastic day, and it's Tuesday, the 14th of May. It's a 7:30 start. There's already loads of tickets being sold. You do need to hurry, though, if you do want to secure your tickets for the event. So please don't delay. Make sure you do get your tickets, and the link is in the description below this video if you're watching it back on catch-up, or if you're listening to it on the podcast as well, we'll put it in the link there as well. Johnny, we're going to bring some other fans on now to have a chat for the first half, to have a talk about the game. So just as a fan, we're just going to get you involved just as a Wolves fan. We've got the voice of reason. This is Jack. How are you doing, Jack?
You're right, guys. How are you doing?
Hi, Jack.
Yeah, how are you? Because you've not been very well, have you? But you made it.
Yeah, I've got a bit of a chest infection at the minute. I think it's this never-ending winter, isn't it? It's just kind of all things coming at once. But yeah, so we'll keep soldiering on it as we should do.
Fantastic. We've got Liam Berry, who is the son of Paul Berry, who you know very well.
Thank you
indeed. Were you down in Cornwall last week, Liam?
I was. It was very nice. Very windy, so I brought the wind back with us. And I think that's kind of what got James Ward-Prowse's goal, so I'm sorry on that behalf. But yeah.
Fantastic. So Liam, by the way, Johnny, he is a fan writer for us for the alwayswolves.co.uk website. He writes articles on our website for us. He does a great job contributing.
If he's half as good as his dad, he's on the right lines.
Exactly. I'll probably sound a quarter at the minute. I'm halfway there, maybe.
He does a grand job. He's following in your footsteps as well. And we've also got Chelsea.
Hello,
how are you doing? Hiya. Chelsea's our hostess with the mostess. She was doing the watch along yesterday during the game. She had for one moment, she had so much joy when we had that equaliser, and then you could just see the pain go over your face, Chelsea, when the VAR come and you're like, oh goodness me.
Yeah, so, it's heart wrenching, especially because you're watching it in silence. It makes it 10 times worse because you can't hear anything that they're saying on TV, so you literally feel like lost. You don't know what's happening until he went over, so it was very hard.
Oh, I'm so frustrated. So, John, if you could just join us for the rest of the first half of the podcast, and then like we'll do part two with the other guys that are waiting to come on.
We've got
George, Lucas, Chris, and we've got charismatic Craig as well, and cheerful Chris. We call him cheerful Chris because he's always grumpy. To be fair, he's always grumpy. So at the end, before we finish at the end, we'll be asking for your man of the match, your performance rating, and your highlight of the day as well. So have a think about that. Jack, what would you like to say? Because you've not been very happy. I've seen you on a couple of chat groups that you've been quite upset about what happened, and you want a little bit of a protest at Arsenal, don't you?
I think it's got to that point now where I think it's just not good enough, and you know. We talk about stakeholders in the game, and I think fans are an important part of football. If you go back to lockdown football where the stadiums were shut, all we heard from the TV reporters and everything was, it's not the same without the fans, it doesn't feel real and everything. And yet VAR seems to be so anti-match day experience and so poor for people in the stands that have paid good money and time to travel and everything. Like, I just don't think that apologies cut it anymore. Just on the decision yesterday, it's a subjective offside. So as soon as it becomes subjective, the lines are so blurry and so muddy that it has to be completely and utterly clear and obvious for them to overturn that decision. And I don't think it is. Because, yes, he stood in an offside position, Chirera, but that's not an offence. You can't be penalised for standing in an offside position. You have to have an impact on the play or the opponent. And I don't think he does anything. If he moved towards the ball or moved into the goalkeeper, OK, it's a different conversation. But he does absolutely nothing. So I think it's a poor cop-out from the officials, to be quite honest. The fact that it's a last-minute equaliser makes it more painful. If it was like in the 70th minute, you've got 20 more minutes to get it back, haven't you? So then you've got a little bit more onus on yourselves, because it's pretty much the last kick of the game. That's what stings, I think. So, yeah, I just think, you know, Howard Webb will come out and say this, that and the other and tell everyone why we're wrong and he's right. And it's just not good enough anymore.
Or we might get an apology. You never know.
But what good is, I mean, it's like a loyalty card, isn't it? If we've had five apologies this season, do we get some points? Or I don't know how it works. We've had four or five decisions now. We're very, you know, at the start of the season, we were talking about a potential relegation battle, weren't we? Now, can you imagine if we'd have been in that relegation battle right now and we'd have had 5, 6, 7 points, maybe even more.
Eight, that
we feel like we've been taken away by poor decisions. That can have a monumental impact on your season. And if you do get relegated because of poor refereeing decisions, Edward Webb doesn't lose his job. It's the people in the ticket office and the club shop that have to suffer. There's no accountability at all, I don't think, with these officials. You know, we saw it with Anthony Taylor, didn't we, when we had Newcastle, and he made a terrible decision. And they came out and said it's a poor decision. He got dropped to the Championship for a week, had a stinker. And the week after, he's refereeing Manchester City v Chelsea. That's not accountability, is it? So I think we've got to start looking and thinking, well, you know, Jeff Shee's come out today, hasn't he, and said, you know, the PGMOL need to start looking and trying to improve standards. Howard Webb's been saying since he took the job that he wants to improve standards. There's no evidence that that's actually happened, is there? So I just think as fans, we've got to kind of be saying, well, you know, we can't just keep sucking it up, can we? We've got to stand up and go, this ain't on.
Well, and Jack, to be fair, Johnny, as well, because obviously it's good for you to sort of hear like all the feedback, and I'm sure you see it as well. But Jack's quite a calm person. It's like we call him the voice of reason because he's normally, you know, you're very kind of measured. So for you to be upset and angry, it sort of sets the level of where the fans are feeling. It's just like it's us again. It's done, and you do make the point right that it's kind of 8 points. And someone out of many other people have said, you know, Forest have had 4 points deducted for breaching FFP. Everton have had 6. We've had 8 because of all these things. But we would be 6.
Yeah, I'm not sure that tallies up. We've had eight points worth of bad decisions, but you're not adding up the bad decisions of teams we've played against as well. I think it gets...
Well, it's a fair comment.
I think once you go down that route, because there's no Wolves fans sitting there adding up all the ropey decisions that the opposition
maybe
had against us.
Maybe someone should. I think there was a VAR table up that came out. We're up there, definitely.
Yeah, you can't just say it's 8 points. It's not, because other teams have had bad decisions in the matches against us. But you know, I get the frustration though. I do get.
To be fair though, I mean, even Gary Lineker is like Wolves. Like last night, Wolves have had it really bad. This year, all talk about how bad we've had it. So I think we've had it the worst, you know. But you are right; there will be other clubs that are, I mean, I know West Ham had a couple of bad decisions. Because to be honest, the West Ham fans have been pretty good on the comments and reacting to us, and they've saying they feel really bad for us. But like they've had some bad decisions as well, so they kind of feel for us. Liam, what do you want to say back on that?
I just really want to echo everything Jack said. I think he said it perfectly. If I was to put it into words, I don't think I'd get anywhere near how exquisite he said it. So I think it's got to the point, I think, if it wasn't for this season, I was for VAR. I was always saying, as long as they get it right, I feel like it's good for football. Because obviously they'd be eliminating all the errors. But personally, I can accept human errors that's on the pitch. What I can't accept is that they're still making these errors with all the slow motion video technology that they've got. That's just not on for me. And this season has completely turned me against VAR. I genuinely think it's doing more wrong than right at the minute, because we can't celebrate a goal. I was on the phone to my mum when we scored yesterday and she heard all the celebrations. It was beautiful. And we ended the call and VAR comes up and it ruins the day. It's terrible. It's doing more wrong than right at the minute. And again, I think Jack said everything perfectly. I don't see any circumstance that they can bring it back, really, because there's nothing that they can really add to make VAR kind of echo kind of what football was before, how you can celebrate a goal knowing that it is a goal. It's just speechless, really. It's
interestingly
terrible.
Enough, the Baggies game this year when we're away at the Hawthorns, it's the FA Cup, we score the goal's given, you're celebrating, you're not waiting for a thing. It was real. I'm not anti-VAR either. I mean, to be honest, I've been kind of like, I think the goal line technology works really, really well. I think we've seen like in the Women's World Cup and the Euros and of the automatic offside stuff that they do. Premier League have opted a different way of doing it. You see them, don't you, with the scene. That worked out pretty well. There was not a lot of mistakes made at the World Cup. But in the Premier League, it seems like we seem to still be having these issues. And you're a young lad, you know, going to the game to, you know, we get, you know, we have the pain. We have the pain, don't we? Like the Coventry game, that, you know, it's so much pain. Getting a last minute loss, I mean, that was painful. But to get a last minute equaliser or a last minute winner and then be celebrating for 30 seconds, like you're on the phone to your mom because you're so happy, and then all of a sudden, and you're someone that's, you know, starting out as a fan, you know, young lad going to games and stuff like that, and it's killing it for you as someone to enjoy the spectacle in the game. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, the Coventry, you can kind of accept that because we didn't play well and Coventry deserved to win. I think yesterday, the first half performance, I went to that game. I was really, really ill. I was cured by halftime how good we were playing. It was so refreshing to see us play well again because we haven't played that well since we've lost to likes of Cunha, Neto and Hwang, have we? We haven't had that vocal point up front and we haven't really been playing as well as we know we can. But it's when you lose a game where you're quite... You should be winning. I think Sarr nearly saved the penalty and the corner should never be going in. At the time, I was banging on about how Shumwell's got to be on that back post, but watching it back, I don't think
he would have stopped it anyway.
It was impossible.
The way it went in and stuff like that. But as I say earlier, Antonio, and we talked about it with Johnny earlier, you know, Antonio's backing into Sarr to stop him from, you know, jumping. He's in an offside position technically, but like, that doesn't get pulled up, and it shouldn't, because that's part of the game. Someone's dragging someone down, it's a different thing, but like that's always been there, hasn't it?
Yeah, with our goal, Fabianski was holding Chiwerera. He was holding him. He was holding him and he let go, and then Kilman's headed it. In no way, shape or form is he interfering with the goalkeeper there. You can clearly see by the video footage. If it was the case and he was interfering with play, Fabianski would have immediately started screaming at the ref. All the players would have as well. It was only when Fabianski saw the VAR on the screen that he started to pipe up. And that's obviously because he's got a chance and he's seen a chance that the goal could be disallowed and his team could win. If it was the case and if he was truly being interrupted, he'd be screaming. You would have been able to hear him in Molineux over all our cheers. That's what would have happened. There's no two ways about it. And you can clearly see by the videos, he's far away from the keeper. Personally, I don't think he's interfering. That goal should have stood.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Absolutely. And Chelsea, you know, obviously you were watching it on the TV without the sound and
You know, I've watched it back today, and you know, you did a fantastic job at the watch along. You know, you just see your little face drop after the joy, and that was how we were all feeling. It's like, what's your take as a young, you know, female fan? You go as many games as you can. You watch, you know, all the Wolves matches. What's your take on VAR? Where are you with it?
I think, obviously, as much as we want to say, if you don't like VAR, you want it gone, it's not going to be going anywhere anytime soon. I supported the goal line technology because I remember watching that Frank Lampard goal against Germany in like 2010.
I remember screaming for it.
Yeah. I remember it and I went, that's what we wanted. I don't remember any football fan asking for VAR. And I completely agree with Liam of, we can handle human error because we all make mistakes on the pitch, but VAR was brought in to remove that problem. But if you're having to slow down a live moment into small snippets, it's not a clear and obvious error. For me, yes, though, how long it was taking to make the decision, I understand by the letter of the law, he's offside. But the way in which Kilman scored that goal, it was going in the complete opposite direction of where the goalkeeper was. So he wasn't going to impede the goal. He wasn't going to save it. And the eyesight, he could see it. And for me, if you're a goalkeeper and you're an opposition player, you could say, no, then I'll just make sure I am standing behind an opposition player. And then I can use that if the goal goes in to say, well, he's blocking my view. Because if you've done it against Wolves, then you could make the argument next game, well, you've just done it to me. And I think that's the problem with subjectivity. If the game is so subjective, you've got professional players on Match of the Day, you've got people on here, people on YouTube saying, I don't think it's offside, I do. Then if the law is that subjective, the law has to be changed. Because I don't think the laws have changed with how VAR is being operated. And to me, why are you going over to a camera to look at if it's an offside or not? It's not a difficult decision to make. You're either offside or you're not. And if you're having to look at a screen and figure it out for 3 minutes, it's not a clear and obvious error. But to me yesterday, and I completely understand with Johnny of going, there might be subconscious bias, but how that goal was checked didn't seem fair to a fan. And I think that's what all of us want. I know supporters of smaller teams feel like their team is not being supported compared to other players. Just like that Liverpool game, when the guy was just offside and they scored. As much as subconscious bias is going to be there, as smaller clubs, if we all feel the same way, we're not all delusional. We can all see there's a problem. And if VAR's not going to solve that problem, we need to pick and choose where it is. It was like that one with Emerson, when Emerson touched Semedo, and people were arguing, oh, it was very a lackluster push, or the foot was on the right heel of Semedo, isn't that right? If it was anywhere else on the pitch, you'd give it as an offside, you'd give it as a foul. Yeah. So that one's understandable. But this, the one for Kilman, it should have been a goal. It's too subjective. And if it's too subjective, they've got to change the law. Because if the law's subjective, that means no one understands it properly. The game needs to be as clear, as obvious as possible.
Yeah, well said. Johnny, obviously you're getting a taster, you know, of different genres, fans of all ages and stuff like that. You can see in the chat as well. We've got 500 watching live. There'll be thousands more listen to it back. You know, I know that you're kind of like, you do a job, you do a grand job, you know, you've got to be impartial, especially when you're there. We know you're a Wolves fan and you feel it like all of us. But like, all I can ask, what can be done, in your opinion, that you work in broadcasting, you see the reaction of players and managers, you probably have the odd chat with referees, you can sympathise with where they're coming through. What can be done to make it improve? Because we're, to a point, you're losing the fans. The VAR started to slowly lose the fans. And if you lose the fans, then you lose what is the best league in the world. You know, it interrupts the flow of play as well. What can be done?
Well, I mean, Chelsea makes two very good points there. The first one is about it's not going away. We are stuck with it. Now, if it was up to me, I'd just get rid of it. I hate it. I loathe VAR more than anything, just because of it. I think it's ruining it for matchgoers. So I just can't stand VAR. But we've got to accept it's here. And the other point about the laws needing to change because of VAR's introduction is really interesting, because exactly that scenarios that we've had with that particular Kilman goal, and maybe that Kilman goal will go on to be a case study in this at a later date, because there needs to be a way of the referee not being sent to the screen or either disallowing it immediately. What happened then in that level of subjectivity and that decision-making caused by VAR at the screen needs to change. So I think rule changes or law changes, to use the correct term, are probably something that have to be thought about to acknowledge VAR's presence and the fact that things are being seen from different angles, or referees are viewing things from different angles, not just their own eyesight at the time of the incident. And then I think the other thing is the bar of interference of VAR. I mean, it's taken other sports a long, long time to get into the position they want to be with technology. Cricket was a shambles early on, I think, you know, when they first brought in the reviews, and that's changed slightly. And there's all that umpires call stuff. I think it'll only be over time that we'll iron out the mess that we have now. And it'll something that need to be tinkered with over time till we get to a point where it's not interfering and ruining it. And, you know, you're all spot on. It is starting to ruin it for match going fans. And, you know, IFAB and, you know, the games authorities have got to be really careful with this, because they can't allow it to continue like this, because it's just, football's a really, really expensive hobby for a lot of people, and a lot of people invest a lot of time and money in it. And I think they're being really, really shortchanged by their experience with VAR, and have been ever since its introduction.
Absolutely. And, you know, the fans do spend a lot of money following their team. They spend a lot of money. You know, it's not just about the ticket sales. It's the petrol. It's the drinks, the food. It's all of that that goes into it. Because you follow your team, you obviously, everyone's incredibly passionate about it. And the raw emotion of football is what it's all about. It's that, you know, the pain and all the joy and the celebrations, you know, it's all them moments. It's like when you go to a game, it's the moments that stay with you. It's that moment, you know, the Man United game when we scored the second goal in the quarterfinal of the FA Cup to get to Wembley, you know, the Tottenham game earlier on the season when we scored those two goals at the end, the joy. And obviously you have the flip side, obviously, with the comeback against United, the late goal, the commentary, you know, all of that. But it's the moments that you celebrate. And if you're like, can't celebrate a goal anymore without thinking, can I really celebrate this or not, then you're losing so much out of the game, and they've got to sort that out. I know you can sit in the armchair at home and you can watch it and you can get all the, you know, the commentators and analysing it and giving the viewer, and it has a massive global audience, and you can sit and watch it, you can see the reruns, and they can see. But the thing that frustrates me is this in-stadium experience for match-going fans is just unacceptable. It is unacceptable, and they've got to do something. Otherwise, they're just going to have... There's people that are stopping going to football matches now are not renewing their season tickets or not going, or they're going to watch lower league games because that's more real to them. And that's the thing. Jack, Liam, Chelsea, do you just want to come back on what Johnny's had to say there, and then we'll close up with the ratings for the game?
Yeah, sure. I think I said on the watch long, before I start everyone, you always say, don't shout out the score. But I always say as well, we don't know what VAR is going to say. And that just emphasises how much VAR is impacting our enjoyment. Because even I say, we've got to check VAR first before we can even celebrate this goal. And I can agree with Johnny in that we need to see that change that's being made to the law to make sure VAR and fan experience is combined to make it work the best it can. Also, I think one way to help fans and also people watching at home is referees being mic'd up. It works in rugby. I don't see why they can't trial it so we can hear what they're saying most people get upset or angry because they don't understand the process that's going on in their mind of why they're making a decision. But if we can hear that decision, whether we like it or not, we can understand it and appreciate it more. I don't agree with kind of like an interview at the end, because I think that can be a bit more toxic. But if you're in the game, you've got the mic, let us hear what you're saying so we as football fans can understand your logic of the game, and then we can move on. Because when we couldn't hear what was happening, that's what made us frustrated more. Because we feel like our game's being dictated to us. Whereas if we can hear what decision they're making, we feel part of that process. And I think that would help some fans deal with VAR better.
Jack, your thoughts on that?
I like the idea in principle of miking up. I think there's football's very different to rugby, though, in terms of the language that's used by the players and things, and I'm not necessarily sure that miking them up would work. And I don't think they'd go for it, because that means they've got to be transparent and accountable, and I don't think they like doing that. I think they like being in their own little bubble and marking their own homework, if you like, and that kind of thing.
That's the problem.
Yeah, that's the issue. I mean, for me, you know, in terms of, you know, we're talking about an independent regulator for football overall, perhaps PGMOL and the referees need an independent voice at the top, sort of saying, you know, okay, this is what the referees can do and this is what they're capable of, but also this is what, as supporters, this is what we need from you. And so whether it is miking up, whether it is a greater accountability, that kind of thing, whether it is showing the replays in the stadiums and things, you know, that's perhaps what we need. But just quickly, I think earlier on in the season, Manchester City v Fulham, Manchester City scored a goal that was very, very similar to the one we scored yesterday. I think it was Ake headed it in and Akanji was stood in front of the goalkeeper, made no attempt to play the ball, just stood there. And the VAR allowed the goal to stand. Do you know who the VAR was? Tony Harrington. So the same referee that was on the pitch yesterday. So two identical-ish decisions. One's disallowed, one's allowed. So I think perhaps Howard Webb and PGMOL need to take a big step back at the end of the season. And like Chelsea says with these rules, and Johnny says with the rules, what is it that we're going to disallow? What is it that we're going to allow? What are we looking for from certain situations? Because it feels to me like they're making it up as they go along. And sometimes there'll be a controversial decision in a game involving one of the big teams. And all of a sudden, oh, we'll penalise that every time now. And then after a couple of months, oh, it's gone out of fashion then. We're going to focus on something else that we're going to keep penalising. If you remember last year with Lamina, when he got sent off for being the third player running to the referee, yeah, and everyone went, well, I've never heard of that rule. And they went, oh, it is a rule. And then 2 weeks later, someone else did it and no one was punished.
It's
and then that
not,
kind
it's
of
got a rule anymore.
Yeah, I think,
and I think this comes back to where the frustration comes, because it's been going on. Like that, you talk about the penalty and the red card against Raul away, the Liverpool, oh, the camera disappeared. We didn't have an angle because the cameraman was, you know, in the FA Cup. All of these things, and this is where the conspiracy comes from, because it's like conveniently lose a camera on the Champions League venue for that game. It's like, you know what I mean? We laugh about it, but it builds up over time, and that's where it gets to. Have you, Jack?
Yeah, I was just going to say that that's kind of it, isn't it, really? I think like we've almost, like I say, making up as they go along, and it doesn't feel to me like they're particularly on top of themselves, what the rules are and almost the expectation. You know, I'm not going to kind of go in on the kind of they've never played the game before. That's what a lot of people say. But sometimes it feels to me like someone who just understands the game would have looked at that situation yesterday and gone, letter of the law, maybe he is offside, but it's never offside, never off. And let's use some common sense and allow the goal to stand. And I don't think even West Ham would have had been up in arms about it if it had been allowed to stand, because, like I think Liam said at the time,
I don't think any of the West Ham fans, West Ham players or fans or anyone complained. I don't think Fabianski really did, other than you would like when they try and make an offside gesture. They'd accepted it, and then the VAR comes. Liam, your thoughts on Chelsea's idea, and then to conclude this half of the show, if you can do your Lee Moore Windows Man of the Match, your Fox at Shipley performance rating, and, of course, your highlight of the day.
Well, entertainment-wise, I would absolutely love the refs to be mic'd up, because you're hearing all the players swear at them, you're hearing everything. The fans are going to be reacting to every little word that's been said. Whether or not it works, I don't think it would. I think that would cause too much animosity around the stadium. I think it'd be 10 times more aggressive. But like I said, entertainment-wise, I'd absolutely love it. I'd go to every game. Even if the tickets were up to 10 grand, I'd go, because it'd be so entertaining. But yeah, I don't think VAR has ever been this bad. I think even in previous seasons, they're just adding in these rules that nobody really asks for, and I don't think it's needed, really. Because even before, you could kind of know what the rules are. They weren't getting changed every other week. It's like, it was somewhat consistent. Even, you'd obviously get the odd decision against you, and you'd obviously have a little moan about it, but it was a lot more, you could comprehend it a little bit more than you can now, because right now, I don't trust VAR one bit. I think Johnny said it earlier on. We've definitely had decisions that have gone towards us that we've been very lucky to have. I think all this talk about how we've lost 8 points, that certainly wouldn't have happened, because it's an emotional team. If the scoreline's different, I'm sure the games would have panned out in a different way. I really doubt that the 8 points really is an accurate figure for how much we could have if VAR wasn't in place. But yeah, it's most certainly never been this bad. I think it's getting to the point where they've got to make some changes. And personally, I just don't see what they can do that can make the situation any better. I think I've said it for a long time. They just need to get one rule book and stick to it for just a couple of years. You know, you've got to stick to it, because it's when they change it, that's when we get a bit of confused. It gets confusing. I'm confused every time I go to the games, because we could score a perfectly good goal in my eyes, and then randomly something comes up. I think City game a couple of years ago, when they penalty the encroachment thing, I never heard of encroachment. When I saw the word was on the TV, I was flabbergasted. It was a new word to me. I didn't know what it was. It's like, all the rules, it just makes the game so confusing. I wish they could just get one rule book and stick to it simply. And that's what they did with VAR previously. So I think it's just unneeded rule changes that does it for me, and why I am like against VAR.
Fantastic. And you'd say you're man of the match for you?
To be fair, I want to give credit to Kilman. I do want to give credit to Kilman. I think he had a very good game yesterday. I think the one thing I would say is that he needs to have a bit more character as captain. When we went 2-1 down, he was just standing in the middle of the pitch. I was screaming in the family enclosure. He was standing in the middle of the pitch doing absolutely nothing. You've got to be encouraging the team, because it's a young group. You've got to have a bit of support when we're losing. That's one thing I will say about Kilman. But performance-wise, I think he was really, really good. I think he had a really solid game, and he seemed up for the fight with Antonio. And it was quite nice to see that, because Antonio is big and strong, but it was nice to see that we had a defender that was looking up for the challenge. What was the other one? Match rating.
Your match rating, your highlight of the day, and that could be just having a pie.
It probably will be. Match rating, I think it was a story of two halves, personally. I think the first half was close to like a 9 out of 10, maybe, and then the second half, obviously, we dropped off. But overall, I'd give it about a 6. I'd give it about 7. I think we were quite good. The second half was really disappointing, and that's what docks it for me. But yeah, I'd give us about a 7. I think we deserve to win. I think we did enough to win, personally. But and highlight of the day, I'd probably say Cooney not getting injured. That's probably
not getting injured. I love it.
That's probably my highlight of the day. Just so if he got injured, I think Molyneux would have collapsed, the amount of people that would be screaming.
I love it. We're going to do Chelsea, Jack, and then Johnny to finish with. Chelsea, man of the match, performance rating, highlight of the day. Could be your Easter egg at halftime.
I think one thing I'd like to say, though, we've talked a lot about the VAR decision, which is right, but I think we're kind of missing the point of how bad we were the second half.
Yeah.
Like, we're not taking responsibility for our poor performance. And it was like, it wasn't until like the 70-odd minute that we had a shot on the opposition's goal. So I think, obviously, VAR hurt us, but we have to take responsibility for the lack of...
I think Ryan Aitnouri coming off was...
Absolutely. When Aitnouri came off, it's kind of like our shape was confused. And maybe when the changes were coming on, it couldn't help the team. But the whole of the second half, we just didn't have any control. West Ham were getting to the ball first. They were making those important decisions. And I think as much as VAR did impact at the end, we made our own problems. We were absolutely thriving in the first half and we didn't come back in the second. So I think it's important to recognise, yes, VAR upset us, but our performance should have been better. I think for the first half, I give it a 7, because I think with our forward line, I really don't think we're going to score a goal from open play. We had a penalty and I was happy for that, but I don't think our forwards were thriving. We had like one shot on target, so I'll give a 7. For the second half of performance, I'd give it probably a 3, to be kind, so probably maybe a 5 overall. For my player of the match, I think I'd like to give it to Sarabia because I know we've given him a lot of flack and I think I have on the watch long. But he's took that penalty really well and he stepped up and took that responsibility. And I think my highlight of the day was that one moment when I thought we won. Well, before we got a draw and my little dog Milo came up to celebrate and it was completely destroyed. Yeah. But, you know, the dog came out and was excited. It was lovely to have him.
Everyone was saying in the chat, Milo's brought the look, and then all of a sudden... BAR.
Everyone's saying Milo, man of the match.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Jack, on to you. I mean, Chelsea makes a good point. I mean, we've talked about this BAR decision, but Wolves scored 2 and 3 in the first half like we probably should have done. It doesn't affect us, does it?
No, absolutely. I mean, it was a game of 2 halves. I thought the first half was as good as we've played in a long time, to be fair. Just didn't get that second goal to really sort of capitalise. And you know, I like to credit the opposition. I thought West Ham were very good second half. Moyes changed it around tactically, went a bit more man-for-man, pushed Antonio right up onto the centre-halves and their full-backs started getting really high up the pitch and we had no answer. Ait Nouri going off meant we had no out-ball and I think Cunha was probably trying too hard, really. He was a bundle of energy but lacked a bit of discipline and a little bit of, you know, tactical awareness of where to press and where not to press. And I think he was the one who lost the ball initially when we started messing about and ended up with a penalty against us. He gave the ball away in a really bad area and then Doherty and Totti were kind of a bit frozen on the spot and then the cross comes in and it's Kilman. So, masters of our own downfall to an extent, but I think we've got to give West Ham a little bit of credit for the second half performance. So, that said, performance rating, I'd probably go 6.5. I'd give us 8 for the first half, 5 for the second. So, kind of averages out 6.5. Man of the match, I'd like to give it to Ait Nouri, but obviously he went off quite early in the second half, didn't he? So I'm going to go Tommy Doyle. I thought he, in an unfamiliar sort of wing role, he did really well, cut inside a few times, created space. I think he's a beautiful footballer to watch. You can tell he's come through the City Academy because he's always on the half turn and looking for that little pocket of space to play. So that $4 million that we're going to spend in the summer is an absolute steal. And highlight of the day, the run that Ait Nouri made first half.
Oh, when he beat about 4 or 5.
Yeah.
You know, he scored that goal.
Yeah, we're talking about VAR supporting. That's what we want to watch, isn't it? You know, we don't want to watch someone's toenail being given offside and stuff. We want to watch players beating people and gliding through defenders and beating tackles and all sorts. So, yeah, that was a proper, really great moment. It got everyone up, didn't it, as well. So, yeah, I'll go with that.
Fantastic. We've now got over 500 people watching live from around the world, which is fantastic. So thanks for joining us. Johnny, to finish on, the same to you, man of the match from your perspective, performance rating, your highlight of the day. And just to finish on, you know, Wolves 6 games out from the end of the season, you know, more points than last year, the situation in the summer, Gary O'Neill. I know we talk about VAR. What are your expectations for the summer? Because, you know, there's a lot of, you know, concern. Will Fosun back, Gary? Will he get his new contract? What's your thoughts on that as well, just to finish this part of the show? And thank you ever so much for joining us tonight as well.
No, no problem at all. I think the summer will be quite a pivotal one, really, in terms of outgoings and incomings. And I think we'll get a far better judge of where the climate lies going forward on the back of it. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens in the summer. How Gary O'Neill's got a 3-year deal, hasn't he?
Yeah. He has, yeah, but I think he's one of the lowest paid managers. I think they're probably giving him an improved deal, I would imagine.
Yeah. He's probably...
He's been talking about it, hasn't he, in his press conferences?
Yeah. It'd be fascinating to see what happens if... I just hope for quieter summer, but certainly a less...
Divisive.
Less fraught summer than the last summer.
Yes.
So, yeah, it'll be a real pivotal time. I think it's too early to say what's going to happen, but it'd be interesting in that sense. In terms of player of the match, I mean, it's a player of the half, really, isn't it? Because the first half was good and the second half was lousy. And O'Neill, they didn't use this interview on Sky yesterday, but when, because the interview lasted quite a while, they cut it off. But when I did speak to him afterwards, he was scathing at the two goals they conceded, giving the ball away in a corner. He actually likened it to kids' football. He said he hadn't seen that sort of two goals conceded like that since he was involved in kids' football because they were bad goals to concede. But
especially the first one as well.
They were pretty poor. I'd say it's hard to split Sarabia and Aitnori, really. Given that Sarabia had to lead the line, I'd probably just edge him. He's a hard player to... I think sometimes he gets an unfair amount of flack. Right. He's a very highly rated player within the club. But there were questions amongst
the... Isn't he the most highest paid player at the club at the moment as well?
I don't know.
Someone said that, yeah.
There was definitely an issue that the coaches weren't sure whether he suited the English game before Christmas. But I think he's finding his feet a bit more. Technically, you know, he's fine. And if he can just become more comfortable with the English game, I still think there's a really good player there. So I'll give it to Sarabia. Overall, probably a 6 out of 10 showing, wasn't it? You know, 8 out of 10 for the first half, 4 out of 10 for the second half. The highlight, unquestionably, was the Underworld gig at Alexandra Palace that I went to in the evening, which was sensational. They are still the greatest dance band to walk the earth. I think I first saw them in 1996 at the Leeds Refectory, and they were brilliant then, and they're brilliant last night. I actually went with a Wolves fan, so it's slightly Wolves related, and bumped into another Wolves fan in the bar afterwards and had a nice chat with him. But it was an unbelievable gig.
Well, that's absolutely fantastic. And just to remind everyone as well that you can get your tickets for the Wolves Wembley Wonders at the Grand Theatre. The link is in the description below. Johnny's going to be hosting that. All the legends, apart from Alan Sunderland, who's now living in Malta, are going to be at that. There's going to be a lot of behind-the-scenes footage that you're going to see that you've not seen. Lots of in-depth chat. It's at the Grand Theatre. It's already a lot of tickets have been sold as well. If you're a Wolves fan, and especially like you love all the old players and you want to hear all those old stories, you know, they're all getting on a bit now, you know. You don't know how many times you'll be able to get them all together in a room. It is at the Grand Theatre. The link is in the description below, and it also goes towards helping raise some money as well for the Wolves Foundation. So make sure you do get your tickets for that. The link is in the description below. Chelsea, Liam, Jack and Johnny, final thing, score prediction. We'll go Jack, Liam, Chelsea and Johnny. Score prediction for Forest.
1-1.
1-1? Liam?
It's gone safe. I wouldn't be surprised if that's a game we lose, because I think they've got a lot more fight in them and they've got a lot more to play for than we do at the moment. But we'll go with a 2-2. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. We'll go 2-2.
2-2. Charles?
For the sake of the watch-along and needing a win, I'm going to say 2-1 because I can't do another watch along in depression. I can't do it any longer. So hopefully 2-1 for Wolves.
Let's hope we do. Johnny, final one for you, and a final thought from you as well before we go.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a tough end to the season. I think the sort of the Coventry FA Cup defeat knocked a bit of stuffing out of them, and the squad is really, really stretched at the moment. So I hope they can continue to be as competitive as possible on the pitch. I wouldn't be surprised if it does dip a bit, and I wouldn't hold that against any of the coaches and management. I think they're really up against it. It's a tough time at the moment. I think I don't like making predictions, but if I had to, I'd say Forest are probably going to edge it at the weekend if I had to call it. But, you know, I remain hopeful. You never know. I don't think Cunha was ever close to starting yesterday, and that's... I'm not sure he'll be ready at the weekend, but who knows? We'll see. But yeah, I think they've done ever so well this season. I think Gary O'Neill has been hugely impressive and brought so much to the role and really seized his opportunity. And I just hope that, you know, whatever happens between now and the end of the season, if it does become a struggle, that it's sort of not... people don't hold it against him.
No, exactly. I think that you've got to be a little bit objective of where we come. Where he's had 3 days before the start of the season, got us to where we are. You know, he hasn't really had a chance to mould his team. He hasn't had a pre-season. He's done... I mean, even in the circumstances we talked about at the weekend, with, you know, no out and out striker on the field, the first half we were brilliant. You know, he'd come up with a plan to play really well. Okay, we lost the game again in the end, but We just need to just, you know, not have a meltdown because we have a not such a great end to the season because of the injuries. We have got teams coming back. And then obviously going the summer, as you said, is going to be really, really important. Gary O'Neill's going to have a chance with Matt Hobbs and obviously Jeff to make some important decisions. And if they make the right decisions, we've got the nucleus of a very, very good side here. And we could have a really good season next year if they get it right. And I think that's the, like you said, the acid test. Guys, that's the end of the first half of the show. I hope you've enjoyed it. There is a second half to come up shortly and with some more fans coming on to have their say. I just want to say a big thanks to Jack. I know he's not very well. I've got a cold as well, as you can probably hear. Struggling on. Liam, some great points. Chelsea, that win's coming the weekend. Don't worry. We're going to get that win on the watch along. And Johnny, ever so much thank you for coming on. And of course, we'll hopefully talk to you a little bit closer to the event as well, as a standalone special to promote that as well for you as well. So thanks for coming on tonight and giving up your time, mate. And also being so honest and open with the fans. I think everyone appreciates that.
Thank you. Nice to chat to everyone.
Yes, thank you.
Cheers, guys. Cheers. What a great first half of the show. That was absolutely fantastic. Some real good, honest debate. Just a reminder, again, thank you very much to our friends at Creation Wolf for powering the show.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates are already booked in for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.